The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I would imagine that for a lot of you, October is just another month. It's fall. It's beautiful. The state fair just started. Why anybody goes there, I have no idea. But October is just generally a nice month for a lot of people. But for some of you, this is a particularly difficult month. It's a poignant month. It's a month that's impregnated with a lot of meaning and bad memories and pain and loss, because October happens to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And this is not something — I say this every time that Joy Forrest is back in the studio with Call to Peace Ministries — this isn't something that I think we can ever talk about too much or too often, because it's far too common and most people aren't aware of that. It's not dissimilar from the abortion issue, where you have about 35% of women, adult women in America, will have an abortion by the time they reach 45 years of age. There are a whole lot of women and some men, but the vast majority are women that experience domestic violence and abuse in general. Okay, so whenever you hear domestic violence and you hear abuse, don't necessarily think it's only about black eyes or worse, because there's a whole lot more that goes on with domestic abuse than just the physical violence. But for a lot of people, but it might be you, and certainly for all three of the women on the show today, this is a personal issue. It's a deeply painful issue, but God likes to work in painful situations, and no matter what the world throws at him in its brokenness, you can always trust him to do some work on it and do miracles and help you if you're willing to go down that road. So we're going to talk to all three of these ladies today. But of course, Joy Forrest back in the house, Call to Peace Ministries, founder, chief executive, and any other titles, Joy,
that you'd like me to? Executive director.
Executive director, CEO.
Yeah, there you go.
Board member, chair board.
We say founder.
Founder. Yeah, founder. That's good. That's good. I'll get you a t-shirt. Anyway, it's great to see you. How are you? Thanks for coming in.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having us.
Is this month different for you? I mean, obviously it's got to be, because you guys have a very busy season with Called to Peace, and Called to Peace has grown so much in the last 2 years, and obviously there's so much need out there. But when it's particularly pointed like this, does it just feel different to you, being a survivor yourself?
Yeah. Sometimes I think the gravity of it hits me once in a while, especially when we have to tell stories. We try to tell stories and raise awareness during this month. So some days I get overwhelmed, and I get overwhelmed at God's goodness that he would allow us to be a voice and to make a difference.
Yeah. And where do you think we're at on a scale from 1 to 10 as a nation and as a church when it comes to our awareness of domestic violence?
I have to say that it has improved amazingly just in the 5 or 6 years since we've been doing ministry. The church is waking up, but still don't know how to handle it very well. Yeah. I would say on a scale of from one to ten, maybe a 5. We're better than we were.
It's an interesting season where I have plenty of issues with the Me Too movement, but it has brought an additional light to the conversation. And everything we see happening with people like Andy Cuomo, or whoever, pick your big star, sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right. But I'm glad for that. But how prevalent is it? How many women experience domestic abuse and domestic violence?
Well, the American Medical Association said back in in the 1980s, they did a survey nationwide, and they came up with 1 in 3 would experience severe physical harm in a relationship, in an intimate relationship, in their lifetime. I took part of that survey, and I lied on it because I thought they would try to hunt me down and do something. I was young and I was fearful. But also the World Health Organization says 1 in 3 will experience physical abuse, physical harm in an intimate relationship. So we know that it's probably even higher than that. That's staggering.
Yeah, because there's a lot more to it than just physical abuse.
Absolutely.
What are some of the other signs? Because that's one of the things that happens every time you're on and every time we talk about this, is I'll get some feedback from people that really didn't know that what they were experiencing actually is abusive.
Yeah. I would call it, in my mind, it's like being held hostage. It's like a domestic terrorism. Mm. So you don't have a lot of freedom to be who you are, to think what you want to think. You're controlled in multiple ways, from intimidation to manipulation to mind games. to financial abuse, using the children, all of those things that you tend to read out for me every time I come now when you look up the power and control wheel.
Yeah, and I think that's one because you went through that yourself. Yeah. We're going to talk to Beth here in a minute, Beth Agner, who's got a story that involves her and her sister, and tragic, and some of you might remember it when she shares it. And then, of course, our friend Lynn is here, and she's going to share as well. But do you find that for yourself, at first you're like, I don't know that I really want to classify this as abuse?
Absolutely. In fact, most of the women that we work with will come to us saying, I know something's wrong. I just don't want to call it abuse. I'm just really confused. Most of the time, they don't call it abuse until something really more severe happens. Yeah. And that was my situation. I was in it for 23 years until I finally named it as abuse.
Mm. Next week, something's going on that you guys are doing here locally at Called to Peace Ministries. By the way, that's calledtopeace.org. So if you're down this road at all, if you think you know somebody that's down this the road at all, you need to go to the website called to peace. That's T-O, calledtopeace.org. But next week, doing a vigil, a candlelight vigil. So tell us about that, because that's one of those things that I think a lot of people might be nervous to go, even though they've experienced it, because maybe for the first time it's coming out of the darkness into the light.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is allow people to come and to just honor the story of somebody they know who has lived through or even not lived through domestic abuse. We'll be lighting floating lanterns at sunset, and we'll be we'll have some testimonies. Beth will be there telling a little bit of her story. We have another survivor and well, actually a couple of other survivors who will be speaking. And then Omar King, who is on our board and is a pastor and elder at Summit Church. And then I will be speaking. So,
Next Wednesday, October 20th, correct?
Yes. Wednesday evening, October the 20th. Right at 5:30 p.m. is when we call it doors open, but there are no doors, so trees open.
Yeah, New Life Camp, which is a beautiful, beautiful piece of property here in the North Raleigh area. So if you're in the Triangle area, or even if you're outside, this is probably something that would be very helpful for you. Why should people come? Because we're going to talk to Beth, and she'll share her story on the other side of the break. But why should people come to the vigil?
Well, first of all, we want to recognize that it is a problem. We want to be able to say to people, this is a problem. It's a problem in our nation. It's a problem in our churches and all around. We want to acknowledge that, and we want to acknowledge the value of the people who have experienced it, the ones who have perished as a result of it, and the ones who have come through, but maybe they're scarred for a long time.
So it's personal healing. Survivors, people that know people. And if you're looking for healing in any way and maybe want to put it out there, because God's going to show up. The question is, will you be there? Because he will be. That's next Wednesday, October 20th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. New Life Camp. That's at calledtopeace.org. You can get all the information. You'll hear Beth's story and Beth and about her sister when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which, by the way, as a reminder, is not just physical violence. Okay, you need to understand that. It's super important. And even for you, some of you guys out there, if you find anything on this rings true to you at some point, you need to get some help, all right, because you could be part of the problem. Intimidation, emotional abuse, isolation, minimizing, denying, and blaming, using the children, economic abuse, male privilege, don't get triggered about that, male privilege, coercion, and threats. So there's a lot more than just physical violence. And then, so we're focusing on a lot of different things today. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Our good friend Joy Forrest from Called to Peace Ministries back in the house, but also brought a couple of her friends and sisters in arms with her. Beth Agner is here, who's been working with children for 15 years now. Is that right? God bless you.
Yes.
So you're the most saintly person in the room, and it's great to have you here. Thank you. And I know this is obviously a difficult subject for you, an incredibly difficult story to tell, but one that needs to be told. So just start wherever you like, because I know this involves your sister.
Yeah, so my sister, Lauren, she is a victim of domestic violence as well as homicide. And so our story, how that unfolds, is you'd have to understand our family a little bit. We are a very tight-knit family. We do everything together. So we are not without arguments from time to time, because we're always together. And we're not without butting into each other's business. So we kind of know everything about each other. And so when she first met Matt, actually her and Matt met in junior high. Mm-hmm. And then my family moved to North Carolina. And They never spoke again until Matt found her on social media. And he found her on social media actually right before he got married to his first wife. And then gave a cryptic email to her saying, I can't talk anymore because I'm getting married and I made a promise to my wife that I wouldn't, you know, sure. talk with other people, blah, blah, blah. Didn't really, like, that sounds great and wholesome. Didn't know the full story, though. And so that's where it ended. And about 2 years later, he reached back out to Lauren, found her on social media. And at that point, his wife had left him and he was ready to move on, he said. And so he was very dedicated to Lauren, always wanting to make sure she was happy, wanting to do whatever he could to, you know, keep her happy. And it was long distance at first. He was living in Bowling Green, Kentucky. She was living here in Raleigh. And I think that really the pivotal time is in October of 2014. My dad had had to have a triple bypass open heart surgery. And he drove down through the night to be there with Lauren. And so it was interesting to see them together and see how much he was there to support her. And so we kind of instantly like gravitated towards him.
Yeah, this all looks good.
Yeah, it looks great. And so from there, things progressed and he decided to move to North Carolina to be with Lauren. He transferred with his job, which he was taking care of people like in their homes, like a companion person. And so he did great at that job, very loving, would always sit and talk with people, was a really good listener, didn't do a ton of talking, but was a really good listener. And he, the first month he was there was, you know, the number one employee of the month. And I mean, things just looked great.
Yeah, all great on paper.
All great. When you really think about it, though, he was just working, you know, a job that only made minimum wage. He wasn't really like being, you know, wanting to further his career or anything like that. But we didn't really think of any of that because he was such a nice, charismatic, yeah. yet quiet person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so fast forward to February of 2015, and our aunt passed away. We went out to California for that funeral, and Lauren just seemed a little bit like frustrated with him and didn't talk a lot about it. Every time I'd ask her, she'd be like, I don't know. I don't know why he's frustrating me, but he's frustrating me. And so about 2 months later, she said, I can't do this anymore. Like, I think you should move back to Bowling Green. And so he left in April of 2015 and he went back to Bowling Green. And I was devastated because I thought he was so good for Lauren. Yeah. She seemed happy. My mom was even upset. She can't put into words what was upsetting her. She wasn't necessarily just upset Matt was leaving, but she was just kind of upset about the whole situation. And then they never really stopped talking. They just texted back and forth all the time. Matt then came back, and it was the end of June of 2015. He came back, and they seemed happy as ever. Well, going back to why he left and why Lauren finally got frustrated was because he was being super jealous about her time. Anytime she was out spending time with other friends, he was asking, when is she coming home? And just acting very jealous. He chalked it up to his ex-wife had cheated on him and left him. And so he had this baggage. And he understood that he couldn't put that baggage on Lauren. And his 2 months away, he'd become a new man and was ready to come back and act appropriately, and he did. And he did for a long time. And fast forward, he proposes to Lauren, does a huge, like, over the top. He always did over the top gifts for her and mm-hmm. over the top proposal, and everything was just very outlandish. Even though he was kind of a little bit more of a quiet introvert, those were the ways, like, he showed his love, I guess. And so it was always like trying to pull her in. Now, you know, hindsight looking at it, you can see her trying to pull her into him. He also was, Lauren was always fought for the underdog from the time she was a little bitty girl. She fought for underdogs. And so he made himself an underdog. So she would fight for him so that she would always want him around and want to, you know, build him up and encourage him and all of those things. And so everything seemed okay until they got married. They got married November 11th of 2016. And rapidly, it declined after that. They went on their honeymoon. They came back. He quit a job without even telling her. Things were kind of crazy. His car died, and so they had to buy a new car. And finances, Lauren was always very financially savvy. When she got married, she had like $10,000 in her savings account or something like that, which doesn't sound a lot for a really established person, but she was still a young adult. And to have that much said something.
Did the word abuse ever show up in any of this?
Never.
No conversation, no thoughts, nothing.
Never. And so we get to January, and he decides to take a job, and it's just frustrating Lauren because he's spending money and he's not making money, and she's stressed out, and she picks up all these extra little side hustles to, you know, help, and it's not working. In February, I wake up from a nightmare, hysterical, and I call my mom and said, I had just had the most horrible nightmare. I dreamt that Matt killed Lauren. And I couldn't tell her because I was so worried they were having so much friction that she was going to think I didn't have faith in her husband to be a good husband and that I would think badly of him. And so I never told her. And things just continued to kind of not go well until we get to August 31st. And on August 31st of 2017, Lauren had whatever day at work, she came home. Me and Lauren are very, very close. We share everything with each other.
Hold that thought, because we're right up against the break.
Okay.
So if you want to, you need to hear what happens next. There's a lot more to this story. It's tragic and heartbreaking. It's going to lead into some other conversations. And so make sure you don't go anywhere. And then make sure you share this around the podcast, the Facebook Live. This is very important. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We've got our friends from Called to Peace Ministries in today. Joy Forrest, who's been on many times. CalledToPeace.org, CalledToPeace, CalledToPeace.org. For all kinds of information, you can find out about the vigil that's going on next week here in Raleigh, the Candlelight Vigil next Wednesday night, October 20th, 5:30 to 7:30 at New Life Camp, which is in North Raleigh. Beautiful, beautiful area. There's a big fundraising effort going on this month that unfortunately, and beautifully and unfortunately, the ministry has exploded in the last couple of years, and that's because the need is great. It's kind of like when Jesus was telling us to pray for more workers because the field was ripe unto harvest. Unfortunately, this field is ripe unto harvest. There is a lot of domestic abuse going on. Not enough of us are engaged. The church isn't engaged enough. And so we really appreciate you, Joy, as always, for everything that you've done and continue to do. But Beth Agner is here as well, sharing her story about her sister and her sister, an old flame from when they were younger. And everything looks good. We all tend to think like that. And he's nice. He's friendly. He's pursuing your sister. And then he leaves and he comes back and they get married. And then they're having challenges. And don't we all in marriage? That's not abnormal at all. But you have a dream earlier in the year. This is 2017. A terrible thought about perhaps him actually killing his wife, your sister. And then August 31st, 2017 rolls around. And what happened?
So that day, Lauren was... She was happy about a few different things. We talked on the phone several times, and then Matt gets home, and he decides that he was running late from getting home from work, so that was already kind of frustrating to her. And then somebody comes to the door, a girl who's selling AT&T door-to-door, and he knows her, and he decides to leave and go with her. And Lauren says, I almost have dinner ready. What are you doing? And he says, I just want to go hang out with her for a little while. And she's on the phone with me, and she is hot.
Yes.
She is super mad. She just is so angry, and she actually says the words to me, I am finished.
Yeah.
And then she continues. We get off the phone, and she texts me later and says, he is just bringing me down. He is ruining my life. I want out. I'm done. Me and Lauren talked a couple more times that night, but I didn't want to get her super upset. Mm-hmm. And continue to make her relive whatever's going on between them. So I was going to give her the day to deal with it. And then we would talk again tomorrow once she cooled down. What I didn't know is tomorrow wouldn't happen. Because Lauren and I were on the phone up until almost midnight. And she finally went to bed. And I fell asleep where I was sitting in the recliner in my house. And at 12:45 at night, I wake up startled. And I kind of feel panicked. I don't know what's wrong, but I feel panicked. I look at my phone to see, like, did I fall asleep on her? Did she ask me a question? Nope. The last thing I said to her was, I love you. Good night. She said, I love you. Good night. And that was it. And what ended up transpiring in their home is Matt stabbed Lauren to death 123 times. Throughout this process, we had a little steps by little steps had hoped and tried to live in this delusional world that, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe it was super quick and maybe she didn't have that much pain. And as you can imagine, 123 wounds, it was not. It was 20 minutes of pure torture that she fought him and fought for her life. And I think about what were the words she was saying and praying and worrying about her family and what this was going to do to her family, because I know that's what she would have thought of. And Matt then washed himself up, laid out Coracetin cough medicine on the counter, and then called 911 after Lauren was beyond help. Yeah. And had this crazy thing that I was sleeping and I had a dream and I woke up and my wife's dead on the floor and I think I did it. That's what he says on his 911 call.
Because this made big news, didn't it? Because I remember.
Oh, it went worldwide. And it's still worldwide. People from all over the world still contact me to do interviews and TV shows and everything. And so it was traumatizing, to say the least. The homicide detectives came to my parents' house and called him a monster. And I'm like, they're homicide detectives. They see homicides every day. What does that mean? That has to be worse than just like a normal homicide. Yeah. And then as things unfolded and we found out how many wounds and how long the fight probably lasted, we realized why they said what they said. And, you know, when we look back on Lauren's life with Matt, we didn't see anything until the last 10 months of their relationship that even seemed awry, except for that blip that seemed like, of course he had baggage. His ex-wife left him and cheated on him. But that wasn't the truth.
Yeah.
He attempted to kill his ex-wife as well.
Wow.
But she was able to escape.
And so what do you tell people now, Beth, in terms of what you unfortunately learned through all of that in terms of domestic violence and abuse? Because obviously there was a lot more going on than you knew, and probably even a lot more going on than you ever suspected.
Well, I think the scary thing is there was more going on than Lauren knew. Mm. And that's the really scary thing to me, is that there's so much that even people that are being abused don't even realize is happening to them.
Yeah.
Whether that's because your brain is trying to protect you or you just can't see it because they're hiding it that well. Mm. And I think that is a thing. You know, our society has this picture of what an abused person looks like or what an abused person is. And if I don't fit in that box, then I'm not abused. But you might just be abused.
Yeah. And that's the challenge. And Beth, thank you so much for sharing that. And anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
And joy, isn't that the challenge, that a lot of people just don't see it on the outside looking in? And perhaps Beth's sister wouldn't have said that. I mean, at some point, maybe. But it seems to me, and all the times we've talked about this, that's one of the biggest problems is the person being abused can't see it. And the people even around them either can't see it or won't see it. Isn't that
absolutely
a huge problem?
It is a problem. And then I think that if a lot of times as I'm hearing this story and I'm hearing that Lauren said, I'm done.
Yeah.
A lot of times when you tell an abuser you're done, that's 75% of domestic violence homicides happen after the woman either leaves or says she's going to leave. And so, but they didn't have any clue that that he would be that dangerous. I bet he probably hadn't been physically abusive yet.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's so difficult to consider, but we need to listen to these stories. And unfortunately, let's just remember, everybody, you live in a very broken world. We all live in a very broken world full of broken people, and things often, more often than not, are not what they appear to be. So if you have an inkling, if you have a concern, you need to be willing to do that. You need to be willing to press and ask a question and stick your nose in a little bit. And I know that can be awkward, and we all try to pull back from that. But in this case, just like with Beth's sister, that could be somebody's life on the line. Lynn Beeman is here with us. And Lynn, it's great to have you in the studio. Don't take anything with you, by the way. Lynn was in here before because Joy wrote the book called The Peace, which came out several years ago. And then Lynn did the audio version. And so we were able to give her some equipment, and then she got that done, which was awesome. But that wasn't the easiest project for you to do, was it?
And it only took 4 months, right? We thought it was going to take 2 weeks. And by the way, you were incredible during that time because it was that was a challenge, because having been a survivor myself and a lot of Joy's stories that were in the book, You know, I had been out of it for years. But when I read the book, a lot of the stories were very similar, and it got you know, I got triggered, yeah. and I was started having the nightmares again, and it all came back. So it was, it really took a lot of God's strength, yeah. you know, pouring into me to be able to get through with that. But I felt like it was a very important project because there are a lot of women that can't have that book on the nightstand, but they can maybe download the audio book.
You talked about that before, because if you're in an abusive situation, the last thing you're going to have sitting on your nightstand at home
right.
is a book about abuse.
Right, but you could hold it on, hide it on the old iPod and.
Right.
Listen to it, you know, so it, we do have the Audible version of the book now, and it goes through a lot of what abuse is, the power, the control, the physical abuse, but yeah. it also goes through, the second half is very encouraging, and it shows what God can do to get us through these situations, get us out of these situations, and heal our heart, whether or not the church has stood by you. And I've been blessed to have very good churches stand by me, but a lot of women have had very different experiences yeah. in their churches. But her book goes through all of that, and I felt like that was very useful.
No, absolutely. So, and with your own story, and share as much as you want, we'll hit a break in about a minute and a half. But that, I know that also ties into why you're so involved with Call to Peace and why you're so committed to what's going on.
It does. I'm a survivor. I was a survivor of domestic violence as a child. And then as a married woman, my ex-husband knew when we got married that that was not going to be tolerated in our house. And it, just like Beth's situation and Lauren's, it's very insidious. It creeps up very slowly. I mean, it's, you know, it's that old euphemism about how do you boil a frog? You
right.
know, you just turn it up very slowly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it got to the point where there were episodes of physical violence. You know, I was grabbed by my throat. You know, and then nothing, and then an apology, and, you know, promises to change, you know, and then something else would happen 6 months or a year
yeah.
later. And it took a series of incidences like that. It wasn't until my daughter was in the same situation, mm-hmm. and that's the guilt that I bear, that it ever got to that situation. And then after that point, then I found out things had happened to our boys when I had been out of town on business,
wow.
you know, that they were put up against the wall or other things had happened to them. So it takes a while for all of that to come out, and sometimes it's very it's hard to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
As weird as that sounds, you think you would know right off the bat that this is not good, not healthy,
right.
that this is completely wrong, but you make excuses because you don't want to believe it's
right.
as bad
you
as
you don't
that.
Want to believe it's as bad as it is or that it exists at all. We're talking to Joy Forrest today, Called to Peace Ministries, and Lynn Beeman is here right now sharing. We thank you to Beth Agner, who shared her story. We've got some more to share on the way out on the last segment, and some other things that you can do, some encouragement for you, especially if you feel like you're in this boat. Don't go as long as you need, as perhaps you were thinking you would have to go. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which, by the way, is a lot more than just domestic violence in terms of violence. Okay, when it comes to abuse, I said this before, and Joy Forrest is here with us from Called to Peace Ministries, calledtopeace.org. That's T-O, okay, calledtopeace.org. So if you know somebody, if you are somebody that's dealing with this, it's not just if you don't have a black eye, you don't qualify. No, that's ridiculous. OK, and we all have to be a little more paranoid about this than we are. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but this is something that's prevalent, just like abortion. You think I go to a really pro-life church and my pastor talks about abortion, blah, 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 blah. That's awesome. Great. I'm telling you right now, based on the reality of the numbers, that 25%, 30%, 35% of the women sitting in your church this Sunday are post-abortive. The same thing is true when it comes to abuse. And abuse, yes, obviously can be physical, but then there's intimidation, emotional isolation, minimizing, denying, and blaming, using the children, economic abuse, male privilege, coercion, and threats, and violence. Okay, so you need to be sensitive about this. That's why we appreciate Beth was sharing her story, because just unbelievably, sadly, led to the murder of her sister, and nobody saw that coming. And you couldn't predict that, but there were signs, but you usually don't see that until later. And so we need to be aware of the things that we're seeing now. So that's why we are talking about it, Domestic Violence Awareness Month with Call to Peace. And also Lynn Beeman is here. And that was, how long was that season of abuse for you then, Lynn? How long did that last before you got out?
It started in 2012 and it went to 2016. So it was 4 years. But there had been incidences, I think, even before that, that I was
yeah.
unaware of with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, I heard a pastor say once that sin is like spider webs.
Mm.
You know, it's easily not seen. You can walk into them. You can be all tangled up in them before you even realize how bad the problem is. And I think that's very true of domestic violence. Sometimes you just don't know how bad it is. You know, yeah. And you know, you're walking down the dark alley, but there is no scary music, you know, and you want to believe that, you know, your life is good, that these things aren't really happening. You know, the enemy can't hijack your family mm-hmm. like that. But boy, is that a misconception.
Now I think people have the choice that have been down this road, like yourself, like Joy, and like Beth with her sister, where get it behind you, get on with your life, yet you take the time to record the audio version of the Call to Peace book and you're involved with the ministry. Why do you stay in it? Because I would imagine there's a temptation to just get it done. I'm fine now. I'm safe. But I don't want to keep swimming in this pool. Yet here you are. Why?
I will tell you, one of the most beautiful things is to see what God does through this. Because, you know, God can use all things for good. And as terrible as these things are, you know, what Beth experienced, you know, just all of the things, the other women in the group, you know, what warriors of Christ they are mm-hmm. once they come through this, once they are woken up, how they rally the kingdom world around them. You know, they bring souls to Christ in a way that may not have ever happened had these things not occurred.
Yeah.
You know, I see it in, there were women that survived sexual abuse. There were women that had children that were sexually abused. You know, I was in one of the very early groups that Joy started in 2017, and a lot of those women are active in the organization now. A lot of those women are evangelizing and, you know, feeding the faith of yeah. other people around them. There is an incredible strength. I mean, it's like a little army of warriors,
yeah.
you know, because these people have come through this and they're very eager to see real kingdom work done. They understand that, you know, life as a Christian,
yeah.
if you're really seeking Christ, it is a battlefield. It's not a cruise
yeah,
ship. And
sure.
we tend to forget that in America.
Yeah, that's in the future. One day, that cruise ship ends up here on planet Earth, and we praise the Lord for that. But in the meantime, it's one battlefield after another.
Yeah.
So, Joy, help us to kind of wrap all this up. I mean, we still have plenty of time on the show, but because you've got people that we should be, our radar should be on.
Amen.
Pay attention to this stuff. We should be concerned about how our churches are dealing with it or aren't dealing with it. And then, you know, because this happens every time, you know, there's people listening that are being abused themselves. And so how do we engage? What should we be thinking? Help us to kind of land this plane. And then how can we help you all and what the Lord has called you to do?
Well, one of the reasons Call to Peace Ministries exists is yep. to raise awareness and to help be a part of the solution. Our churches, they failed miserably, and it's not because they mean to. It's because this is so counterintuitive. Beth didn't know what was going on with Lauren, even though she spoke to her every day. She
yeah.
had no clue that it would go this far.
Yeah.
And I think our churches, it's the same thing, because most abusers are calm, cool, collected, very charismatic. And so we know, Jesus talked about wolves in sheep's clothing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with pure evil. But we have to learn to recognize it. And so that's part of our mission at Call to Peace, is to educate people to know what the signs are, to help them to know what to look for. And recently, we started a church partnership program. We have pastors who will go in and work with other pastors to help educate them so that they understand what it looks like. And so hopefully we can prevent more tragedies like what happened to Lauren, but also we can help bring freedom to those who have been oppressed and who's maybe their churches are treating it like a marital problem and actually unintentionally keeping them under oppression.
Right.
God's heart is for those who are oppressed. And so that's our vision and our call at Call to Peace. And so we, like you said, have grown 606% in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Actually, we haven't got the statistics for 21, but from 18 to 20, we grew 606%.
And COVID's making it worse because people
yeah.
have been stuck at home and
yeah.
then kids going, because
yeah.
most of the kids that are involved with domestic violence and domestic abuse, yeah. that gets found out while they're yeah. at school. You pull them out of school, you don't hear that.
Yeah.
And so all those types of problems yeah. have just greatly increased.
And so we get hundreds of calls every year. Last year, over 2,000 people reached out to us. And so we need financial support. We have a lot of wonderful volunteers, but we need financial support. And so we have a fundraiser going on during this month. And right now we have a $20,000 matching grant. So anybody who gives money, hopefully in the next day or two, or even this week, the way we're going, it will be matched and it'll be doubled. And so this, all that we do at Call to Peace, basically we're providing direct services to victims of domestic abuse. We're providing education to pastors and church leaders and counselors so that they understand how to deal with it more effectively.
Because most of them just don't. I mean, you and I both have to probably battle our tendency to want to beat the tar out of churches, because I've been dealing with churches since 2004. So there's the part of me that wants to haul off on them. But then the little compassion shows up every once in a while. But churches need to be equipped, and sometimes we put the marriage above understanding what's going on with an abuse, and we want to save your marriage while you might lose your life, like Beth's sister did. So there's the training there, but for women that are starting to deal with it, then there's groups like Lynn was talking about.
Yeah, we have support groups, and we actually have advocacy. So we have a one-year advocacy training now, and we've trained over 360 people, I believe, across the country. And we have advocates in multiple states across the United States now who will walk alongside, help a person who reaches out to us to determine what's going on in their marriage and, you know, help them look at their options. We're not there to tell them what to do. We don't tell them to get a divorce. We don't tell them to go. We don't tell them to stay. We help them explore options, and we really prioritize their safety. And so we do that all from a faith-based perspective, because when I went through it years ago, there was no way I was going to go to a secular shelter. I wanted answers from God's word and his truth.
Yeah.
And so that's what we provide at Call to Peace. I think we're very unique, and there's really nothing else like it.
Well, and we work on healing people scripturally, too, because, you know, even now, you know, I hear frequently, God hates divorce. You know, I'm actually formalizing a divorce, or, you know, turn the other cheek. I've had fellow Christians say that to me in the past 6 months. Well, you didn't turn the other cheek. Well, the Bible says turn the other cheek. It doesn't say stand there and keep getting beaten.
Right.
You know, so, and I think a lot of the conflict for us as Christian women is, you know, we know God hates divorce, and of course he hates divorce, but he hates the fact that there's ever a reason that you should need one.
Sure, of course.
You know, so, and he hates violence worse, you know, than he hates divorce. But of course he hates divorce. But, you know, we have to sort that out in our heads, and that's very confusing, because you don't want to let God down. You don't want to let your family down. You know, I think had our situation not spread to my children, I don't know that I would have woken up and push back from it just for my own sake.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What a great point. And so, again, the vigil next week. Tell us about that real quick.
Next Wednesday, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at New Life Camp. And also it will be streamed on live on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
But we would love for people to come and put a lantern in the water. If you're local, please go to our website and register. And you can, reserve a lantern for your loved one or for yourself if you want to. Mm-hmm. Put something in there for yourself. We did it back at our retreat back in May, and women would put things. They were like just releasing their burdens into the water. So I believe it's going to be very powerful, and we would love for people to come and join us. I think it's going to be a reflection of God's heart.
And then the fundraiser with the matching grant is going on right
please,
now.
Yes, please go to calledtopeace.org and click on Domestic Violence Awareness Month. There may be a donate button on the front page, but please, if you would consider it, we just ask that you would prayerfully consider it. Many of the women that we work with try to give to us, but a lot of them have been financially devastated by what they've gone through. And so I tell people we are a ministry that operates on widows' mites. Mm-hmm. We can certainly use all the help we can get.
And then do you have any more training sessions coming up in the near future?
We have a Protect the Flock, which I believe is the
October 26th, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
Yes, that will only be live streamed. Okay. It's going to happen at a crisis pregnancy center up in Roxborough. And there's no more room for in-person attendance, but you can always register. That's a free training that we do for church and ministry leaders.
Yeah, which I love the title of that, Protect the Flock, Identifying and Responding to Domestic Abuse in the Church. Calledtopeace.org is the website. I've got all the links up on Facebook Live, so you can get to the website itself. You can get to the prayer vigil for next week. You can look at that. You can look at the fundraiser, as well as a link to the book, Called to Peace, and the audiobook that's on Audible that Lynn did. Not that long ago, and praise the Lord for her finishing.
And thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Your encouragement,
of course, it's always great to have you all. And Beth, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Lynn, great to see you as always. Joy, God bless you, and thanks for being in. Share this around. Post it. Don't be afraid to post this hot topic, okay? Because there's people that need to hear it. And if it's you, go to calledtopeace.org. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
another program powered by the Truth Network.